Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Wilson Weekly on the Money Mentor podcast with Dr. Andrew Wilson and Graham Holm. And, well, I don't know whether it's an interesting one or a boring one, but good morning, Doc. How are you?
Yes, I think it's interesting, Graham, and I'm well, and I hope you're well too. I'm sure you are.
Very well.
We're well into February, as we always sort of check on what time of the year it is at the beginning of our podcast, but it's just zooming into February, and before we know it, it'll be Easter or something like that.
And, well, the hot cross buns are already out, yes, put it that way.
Yes, I was going to say, and the Easter eggs and the Easter bunnies. I nearly, you know, I asked the wife if she wanted an Easter bunny, you know, and I couldn't believe when she said no, but because there they were on the shelves in the supermarket. But, yeah, look, so it will be an Easter soon. In fact, you know, we've got a big public holiday coming up in Melbourne in a month's time. That's the Labor Day long weekend. And that means we've got plenty of auction activity preceding that, as we usually do every year. The Melbourne market ramps up. We've got some big news today about our first real auction results of the year. And they're a bit of a surprise, Graham, let me tell you that. So the doom and gloomers, if there are any still left out there, wouldn't have been feeling very chirpy about the beginning of the year. So they would have been revising any of the negative predictions, and I don't think there's a lot of them around this year for a change, but give it time. But, of course, this week was a very big week for the Reserve Bank. The Reserve Bank had its first meeting for the year. They decided where they were going to pitch interest rates for February. Of course, it's a different Reserve Bank this year in terms of its structure. We have a new governor. Well, that's not new, but we have a new governor as of what we had a year ago. But we have not the same amount of meetings and some different structural aspects to the Reserve Bank. And even though, look, it was widely predicted, and we'll discuss that, I guess we'll get into that straight away, even though it was widely predicted that rates would remain on hold, I thought it was interesting when we looked at the commentary from the Reserve Bank, Graham, in relation to their you know, what they bring out with their decision, that we'll get the full minutes in 2 weeks' time from the meeting. But just their spiel in relation to their decision-making, I think was quite interesting what they suggested. And I think last week we were discussing some more of those silly headlines that have been floating around regarding the prospect of interest rate cuts this year. Got plenty to say on that. And I think there was a little bit of a you know, we could look into the Reserve Bank commentary in terms of the outlook for interest rates going forward. And again, I think those that have been predicting cuts to interest rates might have been set back on their tails a little bit, Graham, given what the Reserve Bank said.
Well, my team were giving me an article this morning, Doc. The IMF wants Australia to be hit by even higher interest rates to control inflation. And they've advised the RBA to raise interest rates to address persistent inflation. So I think they want it to actually get tackled pre this 2026. So it's interesting. I mean, you and I talked about saying, should the RBA have kept going, knocked it, should we have gone 0.5%, knock it on the head? I mean, I don't think we've scared average mums and dads out of spending quite yet.
No, well, look, there's no sign, is there? I mean, 13 interest rate increases since May 2022. And really nothing's happened, you know, nothing to do with interest rates. I mean, inflation's lower. Yeah, that's great. But a lot of that inflation decline, we're going to look at the latest inflation numbers today, monthly numbers. A lot of that decline has come through falling oil prices, Graham. So, you know, the question is, would have inflation fallen regardless of higher interest rates? Because really we don't have any of the significant drivers of economic activity showing significant signs of being impacted by higher interest rates, you know, and we're below everybody else in terms of where our official interest rates are. But our inflation's a little bit higher, you know. So isn't that part of what you're saying? Other jurisdictions, other similar economies have higher official rates, but they have lower inflation. So maybe we sort of missed the boat a bit last year, as you said, which we've discussed, and I think we did, that we went into pause mode a little bit too soon. And I think the fact that rates were raised in November on Melbourne Cup Day is sort of a proof of that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, Doc, as well, every time we pause now, it gives a bit of consumer sentiment that it's okay to spend. People go, Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know. Let's get into it, Doc, because I'm really keen to see the RBA's commentary with you, but your commentary to that, and really keen to see, I guess, what happened in this first auction market.
Yes, interesting results. But we've also got the latest My Housing Market rent report, Graham, hot off the press, and that's for January. Interesting results there. Sorry, tenants or prospective tenants, no good news. We expect that, I guess, month to month, almost year to year.
I'm almost petrified to see the rent report, Doc, for tenants.
Well, it's not good news, and it's interesting that it's not good news for those that are looking to rent a house. We sort of had house rents going a little bit sideways and unit rents sort of going through the roof recently, but that sort of switched around a bit over January with house rents now rising strongly and a little bit of easing in unit rents. But we've got to understand that January also has some seasonal factors to it, so we do see some changes at this time of the year due to the fact that, of course, it's the holiday season. But nonetheless, the underlying energy is still one that's very positive for landlords and unfortunately not very positive for tenants out there with really no sign of relief. We'll also look at, as I said, the latest inflation data. We'll also look at the latest building approval data, Graham, which was, gee whiz, not good news again for us trying to resupply our undersupplied housing market. You know, we were getting some signs maybe that we troughed out and reached the bottom of the falling building approval, home building approval cycle, but it's fallen again, Graham. So we'll have a look at that. So plenty to discuss, and we should really get into it, Graham, I think.
Let's get into it. Let's rip in. So
we'll look at the RBA rate decision, the rent report, the latest inflation data, and the home building approvals, and finish off with the maybe remarkable data for the first major auction results of the year, which we always look at very closely. So rates on hold again. Gee whiz, if you're a betting person, that would have been a certainty, don't you think, that they would put rates on hold. That's the second month in a row that they've had them at that level or that they've left them at that level. And as I said, the economy is still strong despite 13 rate rises. Jobless rate remains near record lows. Jobs are surging overall. Unemployment's falling. Participation rate at near record highs. Retail sales are still high and remain significantly above pre-COVID levels, notwithstanding migration surge and inflation. Mm. Inflation is lower, but it's still too high, and it's being driven by housing. No real relief in terms of the housing factor for inflation. Food and fuel, which picked up a little bit. So rates are likely to remain on hold for the foreseeable future. Again, you don't have to be, Nostradamus to be picking that one up, Graham. I think that it's pretty much a wait-and-see approach and steady as you goes from the Reserve Bank. But I thought it was interesting. Let's have a look at the commentary. And this is the key point, I think, from the RBA's decision commentary that it released on Tuesday with its first decision for the year. So it said, while recent data indicate that inflation is easing, it remains high. The board expects that it will be some time yet before inflation is sustainably in the target range. The path of interest rates will best ensure that inflation returns to target in a reasonable timeframe. Will depend on the data and the evolving assessment of risks. And a further increase in interest rates cannot be ruled out. So, you know, mate, I think there was a little bit of, hey, let's not get too excited about cutting rates, because they've come out quite clearly, said you can't rule out any increases in interest rates. So as you suggested, as IMF suggested, as you mentioned, maybe we've got some interest rate increases coming along sooner than expected. But the Reserve, I thought this was a little bit of a pessimistic tone from the Reserve Bank. There was none of the sort of...
I like the word sustainably in the target range.
Exactly.
And further interest rates, increases in rates can't be ruled out. Mate, they're basically putting it down a plus. Say, hey, we're softly, we're gonna hit you on the head again later this year.
Yeah, if inflation doesn't keep falling, guys, those rates will go up. I think all we need is a month, maybe two, of higher inflation numbers, and they will act to put rates up. I thought this was a very bearish type of statement.
I was going to say, I think, Doc, it's safe for us to say, you've heard it here first, because the lamestream media, all the pundits, all the gurus and the commentators have all been pushing, and you're seeing the headlines and clickbait that rates are going to drop this year. Now, reading that and reading the black and white, they're really telling us that sometime before it is sustainably in the target range, i.e. Yeah. stays there, is sustained, remains there, that the path of increasing rates is the best path to ensure that we get inflation down in a reasonable time frame. There's a lot of language in there that says, guys, any increase in inflation or no reduction, rates are going up again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did a number of I had a bit of media earlier this week because it was starting to heat up, that suggestion that rates were going to be cut. And I was like, are you kidding? I think the only way rates will get a cut in rates for a number of reasons is if we get inflation, certainly with a 2 in front of it. We have to have underlying inflation with a 2 in it. And as you said, Graham, and as the Reserve Bank said, consistently, I think, with a 2 in front of it. We're still well below where the US is in terms of our official rates. Their inflation is a little bit lower than ours. Ours has improved. But as I said, a lot of that improvement's come about by falling oil prices. Now, the next week or so, we're going to get the latest wage data coming out. And I would think the Reserve Bank would be hoping that it would be a little bit less than that 4% annual growth we had over the March quarter, over the September quarter. Because if our wages are still rising strongly, then that's not good news for inflation because, you know, people just like you said, suggested that if rates are on hold again, people go, oh, yeah, this is pretty cool. You know, I'm doing okay at the moment, record wages growth. Yeah, okay, there's a few challenges out there. But with rates on hold and wages still rising, if they do rise at those record levels again, then, you know, it's just an encouragement to go out there and spend, you know, and it just means putting upward pressure, theoretically at least, on inflation going forward. But we have to watch that oil price. So I do think it was important to look at that statement from the Reserve Bank, Graham, because I think it clearly says, hey, you know, Kev, you know, just be very wary here. We're not done yet. And we need to have a lot of things happen before we can say, okay, we'll start to even think about cutting interest rates, you know, and some of the nonsense predictions that have been over the last week or two saying that rates were going to be cut here. It just really, again, reflects, you know, that a lot of the mainstream media is driven by clickbait. And a lot of these so-called experts who predict these things have other agendas, and they don't care if they're proven wrong as long as those agendas are met. And just to finish off on that, we spoke about there's been a lot of discussion in America about the rates being cut there.
100% likelihood.
100%. Yeah, the market and the rate watch mechanisms all said back in, I think it was November, that there was a 100% chance that there would be a rate cut in March, the March meeting of the Federal Reserve in America. You know what that is now? It's zero. But, you know, I reckon 100% is 100%. You can't move away in any argument to say, well, you said 100%. So if it's 100%, why wasn't it 99.9%? But basically that means that every commentator that, or every, you know, quasi-economist, pseudo-academic, whatever you want to call them, suggested that rates would be cut in at the March meeting in the US, and now they're all, you know, that's only I think there's 2 out of 10 saying it, and they're just hanging on for dear life. And even those are now a May cut is now only at around about 70%. So even the ones talking about May as being, you know, a first cut are now starting to waver. You know, that's still a very, very strong US economy. And I think the federal the chairman of the Fed really gets himself into some hot water because it's almost as though he can't resist pandering to the questions of when rates will cut. Instead of giving no forward guidance, why do you need to give forward guidance? It is what it is. You know, there's always this, oh, well, I think we might have 2 or 3 cuts and it's like, but it will depend on the data. Well, if it's going to depend on the data, don't make a forecast until you get the data. Right? You know, it is what it is. It's just silly speculation. And it's pandering to the financial markets because they don't care if, you know, they say, oh, it's 100% chance we're going to have a rate cut, because all the punters out there will go, oh, great, we're going to take a position on falling rates. through a number of mechanisms. And when that doesn't happen, the money market doesn't care because those people who took a position on falling rates lose money, mate. So, you know, it's all a bit of a game. It's just a bookmaker's gambit in a lot of respects, trying to promote, you know, the favourite. And then the favourite doesn't get up. And guess what? The bookmakers say, oh, gee, that's too bad. And they're laughing all the way to the bank. So, as I said, we've got to be very careful. And look, that's what we try to do here, of course, and that is to give a realistic assessment of not just the housing market but the economy, which, of course, is the key behind the housing market. So there's the current cycle for interest rates. We've flattened out, still below where we were at the previous peak of the cycle back in 2012. And I think, as you know, we're likely to see rates remain on hold, but it is in the lap of the gods in terms of the data coming through. But don't be surprised, as the Reserve Bank has certainly indicated, with no forward guidance about cuts, they've said that they are quite happy to raise interest rates again. So, you know, look out for that one going forward. So inflation, of course, is an important driver of the Reserve Bank's decision. We had another good month with the monthly December data coming out a week ago, down from 4.3 to 3.4% headline inflation. That's a big fall, Graham. And that followed a fall from 4.9 to 4.3% the previous month. Underlying inflation is now down to 4%. The big contributors were...
It's a solid drop, Doc.
It's a solid drop? Yeah, absolutely. The contributors were housing... up 5%, food up 4%. Fuel actually picked up a little bit over the month, up by 5.3%. But that was up from what was a very significant fall the previous month, down by 2.3%. We need to, you know, really watch the fuel numbers going forward. They have looked like they were starting to pick up again, price of oil. So that's a danger signal for higher inflation. But look, we're at 4% now. The target range is 2 to 3%, Graham. So we're certainly heading in the right direction. But as the Reserve Bank said, you know, don't let off the skyrockets yet, because we need to see a sustainable result within the target range, which is 2 to 3%. So we need, you know, something with a 2 in front of it, I believe, before we'd even start to think about cutting interest rates. But we'll see how it pans out as the inflation numbers come through. So there's the inflation rate. As you said, Graham, it's come down quite significantly. The peak of the underlying inflation a year ago was 7.2%. It's now down to 4%. But we've gone a long way to go, as you can see, to get back to those pre-COVID levels of, you know, 2 to 3%. So fingers crossed, we're heading in the right direction. I don't want to be, you know, a doomsayer at any level here. But let's not celebrate too soon. And as I said, I think the tone from the Reserve Bank on Tuesday was certainly a little bit like take a cold shower, those that are predicting lower rates, because they're still concerned that inflation's not beaten and are still promoting the fact that we may need to raise interest rates again. And that's that relationship between the oil price and inflation. You can see clearly on that chart that oil and inflation tracked each other. It's a little out of sync because it doesn't automatically adjust in the same time period. But when you look at the peak to trough changes in the price of oil and inflation, they've both fallen by around about 40% since their peak. So that's obviously a very strong relationship. Now, we discussed rents, Graham. Here's the bad news, I'm afraid, in terms of the housing market and tenants. Tight rental markets continued into 2024. More extraordinarily tight results. Vacancy rates eased a little bit over January, likely reflecting what was a tightening over December. And again, I think we've got some seasonal effects there, but it doesn't matter. They go up and down from month to month, but they just remain at these crazy low records, record low levels. And it's not just one or two capital cities. It's all the capital cities, basically, Graham. So this just shows you there's a systemic problem in our rental markets. And rents have continued to surge. So let's have a look at the data. Look at that Sydney house rent. It's now $780 a week over January, Graham. That's a 4% increase. That's a lot of rent to be paying. That's the median rent for a house in Sydney, $780, up by 4%, up 15% over the year. Melbourne also up. I think there's a little bit of energy working its way into that Melbourne rental market. It still is $200 a week less than Sydney, but I think it's starting to close in on the Sydney results, because obviously compared when we look at incomes to incomes, Melbourne still has a more affordable rental market than Sydney. But it was up by 1.7%, Brisbane up 0.8%. But Melbourne's up 18% over the year, Brisbane up 9% over the year. Adelaide and Perth were flat, but very strong increases over the year, 14% in Adelaide in house rents and 16% in Perth. And when we look at the vacancy rates, every capital city has a vacancy rate below 1%, which is crazy, even though we did see an upward trend in vacancy rates over the month, January compared to December 2023. These are still just, unbelievably low vacancy rates. Only Canberra is bucking the trend, and it's got a 1.1% vacancy rate, which is still very, very low. But to see that all below 1%, Graham, is just something we've never really seen before. And the consistency, yeah. So no wonder rents are rising. If we look at units, not quite the same energy in units. Sydney units actually eased a bit, down by 9.6% to $735 a week, still up by nearly 20% a year. Melbourne rents, similar to houses, up by 3.2%. There is a lot of demand rising now for Melbourne unit rents. And you can see the differential between Melbourne unit rents and Sydney unit rents is not as wide as it is for houses. So Melbourne's really in catch-up mode there, up by 22% over the year. Can you believe we're actually saying that rents increased by 22%? I'm sure a lot of tenants out there would be nodding their heads thinking, yeah, we know that's what's happening and it's not good news. Brisbane eased a little bit, down by 0.8%, still up 25% over the year. Adelaide up nearly 4%. It has had a 10% increase in unit rents over the year, and Perth down 1.7%. Adelaide and Perth are smaller unit markets for rentals, Graham, so they tend to have more volatile results. Vacancy rates are a little higher there for units than they are for houses, with the big capital cities all over 1%, well, Brisbane 1%, Sydney 1.1%, and Melbourne 1.4%. There was a rise in those vacancy rates over January, and as I said, I think there's some seasonal factors there operating with more demand coming into the market. But nonetheless, we're talking what we would be saying a couple of years ago, these are crazy low vacancy rates, 1%, 1.4%, knowing that 2% is the sort of benchmark for an equilibrium, rental market. Above 2% vacancy rates, we typically see rents falling. Below 2%, we see rents rising, and we're nowhere near 2% there really anywhere. Except for that volatile Darwin market, which has a 1.9% vacancy rate. So, look, even though vacancy rates are certainly higher than for units than houses, there's still no really good news there for tenants in terms of the availability of property. So, more tough results in January, still near record low vacancy rates, upward pressure, particularly on rents for houses. And we're certainly unlikely to see any sustained relief with new home buildings, particularly if we look at that as the supply line remaining chronically recessed. And those policies, particularly the ones to reduce migration, are unlikely to have a significant effect on vacancy rates or rental changes. But unfortunately, changes to migration, particularly student migration, which is being planned by the federal government, I'm not sure would be terribly welcomed by the university sector, which is a very significant part of Australia's economy. So home building approvals, which I alluded to before, over December fell. We had two nice rises. Yeah, we had two reasonable rises in building approvals in October and November. So it was like, hey, here we go. Maybe it's starting to flatten out. Maybe we've found the bottom of the cycle and from here we'll start to grow. Well, I'm sorry about that. Building approvals down by 10.6% over December, big fall. A lot of it, of course, was units, which do tend to come and go because they're a volatile element. Big developments, big unit developments can come and go month to month, and that can bring the numbers up or down accordingly. But units were down 25.3%, which is a massive fall, and houses were also down 0.5%. Queensland was the best result with dwelling approvals up by 8.2%, but annual growth levels remain chronically recessed. Even though the quarterly trend looked to be steadying, just a quick look, you can see the trend looked to be just finding a flaw, but starting to fall again, national home building down across the board for houses, units, and the total, not just for the month, but for the year to date and the full year. And we can see there, that, as I said, that quarterly trend falling. The capital city annual trend for building approvals down totally by 38.8%. So that tells a story since 2016. You know, new dwelling approvals have collapsed, mainly units. Units are down nearly 60%, Graham, from its peak. So, you know, with the shift towards apartment living and the preference generally, you know, for affordability and other reasons for apartments, you know, we've just collapsed there. And to see that, the big difference in our apartment building is really telling us the story why we can't house our populace. Rents are rising and prices are rising. And even though we got a big bump from houses in the black cycle there through the home builder policy of the previous government, it's now run out of puff and we're back to, you know, very low levels of activity. Brisbane, the best of the capital cities, down by 4.8%, but nonetheless still down over the year to December. So that's over the full year compared to the previous year. And as usual, Melbourne builds the most homes of all the capital cities. And this is the 2023 result. You can see well ahead of everybody else, Melbourne. And interestingly, after Sydney lagged Melbourne for much of the year in terms of unit approvals, they actually ended up on top, just on top of Melbourne's unit building approvals. So, but nonetheless, that's a lower result for Sydney than we're used to, again, reflecting the difficulties of getting development up. So let's finish off with a big bang here, weekend auction markets. So it was the first real weekend of auction markets. We're all pretty excited because it really is the first opportunity to get a feel for on-the-ground, real-time market activity. Yes, we've got our price reports coming out, but you know, that's a rolling monthly, quarterly index, if you know what I mean. But still, the Saturday auction clearance rates telling us what's happening on the day. And we're lucky to have this sort of data set and this culture, particularly Melbourne and Sydney and Adelaide and Canberra and Brisbane, that allows us to have that insight, real-time insight into what's happening in the housing market. And you can see there when we track clearance rates with house prices in Sydney, it's just about the same relationship. So it's that tells us that that relationship is very strong. Same thing with Melbourne. Higher clearance rates, higher house prices, lower clearance rates, lower house price. So let's have a look at the results. Graham, here we go, drum roll. Big numbers here. I was actually a little surprised at these results. Firstly, the clearance rates were certainly robust. I don't want to say strong, but they're just on the cusp of strong here, but I'll say robust clearance rates. 75.9% clearance rate in Sydney, Graham. That's a good number and well above. Normally we say, yeah, well, typically the market starts off around about where it finished off at the end of last year. But the markets have picked up and particularly Sydney is now tracking the best part of 10% above where it finished in December last year. Melbourne also a good result, 71.9% for Melbourne. Again, anything over 70% is clearly in favour of sellers. That means there's more buyers than sellers, plenty of competition for property. Brisbane, which we always discuss, is a bit of a different auction culture to Melbourne and Sydney, but nonetheless, that's a good result for Brisbane. Adelaide, not back to its 80% results that we got used to weekend after weekend last year. Yeah, still strong result. And Canberra, yes, just middling a little bit still, that Canberra market, which I still think has some upside potential for growth this year after being in the doldrums last year. But Graham, let's when we compare the results of clearance rates to last year, they're all generally higher than where they were last year over the same weekend. And, of course, that's when we were really starting to bounce back. But what's interesting here, Graham, is the number of auctions. 530 auctions to start the year off in Sydney, 423. The same weekend last year, just 358 auctions in Sydney. This year, 540. So it shows you that sellers are pretty happy with that housing market. They're quite happy to put their
nearly twice as many and a stronger clearance rate.
So does it get better than that? And this is the first weekend of the year, Graham. I mean, these properties would have been decided to go for auction, you know, around New Year's Eve. People would have been thinking, okay, let's put it up for auction. This is a very positive result. It still shows that Sydney market's pretty frothy. You know, it's still got obviously some upside to it. Similarly, Melbourne, its auction numbers about 100 more than a year ago, 423 auctions, and a higher clearance rate as well. So, yeah, Melbourne just also started off. But the other capitals were the same. Brisbane, 94 auctions versus 64 last year, 102 in Adelaide versus 89. And Canberra, look, a really big weekend for Canberra, 107 auctions. They also had 109 the same weekend last year. So maybe that was a little bit, lots of stock there in Canberra, a little bit of the reason for that reasonably subdued clearance rate, certainly compared to the others. These are very good results, Graham. This is this is the first weekend. We need some more results coming forward. The Melbourne market, as I mentioned before, will start to pick up quickly now because we have the first Super Saturday of the year in Melbourne in 3 weekends' time, because that's the weekend before the Labor Day public holiday, which is the first weekend in March. So that market will be tested very soon with big numbers of auctions typically. But let's, you know, I don't think, you know, from a seller's point of view anyway, the market could have started out even more positively given where it finished last year. You know, this is a really positive step going forward for the auction market. As I said, we need to work through the next few weekends to see if it can be consolidated. But certainly so far, so good, Graham. And you can see there when we look at the trends for Sydney, the monthly trends are well above the month February last year and certainly above the spring selling season numbers. Same deal for Melbourne. So far this month, tracking higher than the spring selling season. Similar story in Brisbane and Adelaide, just around about where it was over the spring period. And Canberra, as I said, a little bit subdued, but it has been really since the winter market of last year. So things happening in Canberra, but I think there are value opportunities coming through. So good results there, I thought, Graham. Those auction clearance rates are available every Saturday night on my LinkedIn account. And around about 6:15, 6:30, we have the headline results for the capital cities. And Sunday mornings, we send out the national auction result, which includes regional breakdowns for Sydney and Melbourne. So look out for that one. As we always finish off, Graham, with our freebie, the My Housing Market Infinity app, which is the app that will let you know what's happening in each suburb in Australia. That has data because it provides insights into the current asking price and asking rents for each of the suburbs. Nice little app, this one. I've got a screenshot there which shows you the current position of Blacktown, that frog in the throat, a current position for Blacktown these are for houses because you can have rent or price. So this is the price for Blacktown for a five-bedroom house. You can filter for units or townhouses and for the number of bedrooms. So they're the results for Blacktown. And similarly, that's the result if we look at the rental market for Blacktown as well. So get hold of that one. You have to go through Infinity to get the password to the app, but it's certainly well worth having because it does give you a real-time insight because the data has changed constantly into what's happening in the housing market, not just those median prices, also the high and the low price and the high and the low rent and the number of listings as well. So it's a good mechanism for understanding what's happening in your suburb or the suburb that you're interested in. So next week we have December home loans. We've got some results there that are interesting, Graham. Also interesting again in terms of first home buyers. We'll look at the latest house building costs index, which of course has been a problem with inflation and with trying to resupply our undersupplied housing market, those high house building costs. We're also going to have a look for the first time at the latest house price cycle model. So where are each of the capital cities in terms of the house price cycle model? So that's something different, something to look at. I think that's a really good indication of how capital city housing markets are performing comparatively. Now, also the latest weekend auction results, which will be very interesting. Will we stand up compared to the first weekend of the year, the first full week or major weekend of the year? Will we get those same sort of results? What will the numbers be? So look out for that one.
I'm calling yes, given that we just had a rate pause. I think consumer sentiment will be strong.
Yes.
We might see some 78, 80% clearances, Doc.
Well, that's very exciting if it happens, Graham, but we'll wait and see. Like when we look at the cycle model, we'll see where particularly Sydney and Melbourne are positioned on the cycle. And just a bit of a heads up, Sydney and Melbourne are still in a recovery phase in terms of the cycle. So there's upside to those two markets. So perhaps that's what's, you know, driving the clearance rates up.
Being very familiar with your house price cycle model, Doc, and where I believe where you've shown me in the last over the weekend and that they're sitting, I think you're right. They're in recovery. There's still a bit of upside there. It could be a very interesting year for the housing market.
Yeah, well, we've predicted 5% growth for Sydney this year, Graham. I think the risks are to the upside. They may even, you know, I think the risks are that it'll be higher than that. But certainly they had a good start to the year if we're looking for, you know, a 5% plus result, but needs to be sustained. And particularly, Graham, of course, as you said, that we've had interest rates on hold. So, you know, and if incomes are still growing strongly, we get those results soon. There's plenty of confidence around. We still have lots of migrants looking for houses as well. But as I said, in terms of where the Sydney market and the Melbourne market is on the cycle, they're still offering value for buyers out there. And I think buyers know that intuitively. And that's why we're seeing higher clearance rates. But we wait next weekend for the latest game day results on the housing market.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Doc. Pleasure as always. I'm a bit excited to see what happens over the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned, everyone, and pay attention to that cycle model next week. Look forward to it, Doc. Thank you.
Thank you, Graham.